Well, greetings, class. We're continuing our tour through the fifth of the stages of modern Europe. You remember, Renaissance, Reformation, Rationalism, Revolution, and what? Ruin. We're in that fifth stage where things fall apart and are ruined. So much of Western culture, Western civilization, which had developed over centuries, is now in the process of decay and falling apart. We're going to use modern art to exhibit what that ruin looks like culturally. Many of you, young people, if you're like most, have a reaction when I say modern art. You go, oh, modern art, it's so ugly. Or I could do that. And granted, I think you could. You could, construct a perfect, black square and put it on a canvas and then give it a name like Black Square Number One. And yes, you would have created what looks like modern art. It's deceptive, though. What I want to warn you, and when we go to the University of Michigan and we tour the Modern Art Museum, what I tell you about is that there's thought behind this art. It's not just, somebody cheating, as it were, or doing something simple because they don't have talent. A lot of these people have a lot of talent when it comes to art, as art, paintings, drawings, they've been trained. There's thought behind it. I want you to remember that. It's representing. We're going to use the art then to represent the changes in the thinking of the West. But I also don't want you to forget that kind of a revulsive feeling that you have at times. There's a reason why it's ugly. This is where we're going to end today. Why it's broken, shattered, or haphazard looking even. Random. And it gives you a feeling of revulsion. I believe that ultimately you and I were created to appreciate beauty. There's something in us that's created to appreciate that which tastes good. And it's through bad habits that we often develop a taste for what isn't beautiful and what isn't tasty. And this is not good in us. The first time that that a young person might try smoking, for example, there's a visceral reaction of nausea. I remember when I started listening to hard rock music as a 15-year-old. I was revulsed. It's like, this is ugly. But I wanted to be tough and such, so I pushed through it and I became numb to it. Pretty soon I became addicted to it. Our sensibilities can change, but those initial, the way God made us, there's something in us that appreciates in the natural realm, physical realm, beauty and goodness, and that which is taste. And we shouldn't ignore those kind of sensors going off at times. Something went wrong. Why did the West go from that which is beautiful to that which isn't? Now, before I move on and start this story, I just want to just throw a caveat in here. It's not like beauty is an absolute criterion for truth. Satan masquerades as an angel of light. And it's not like ugliness is an absolute criterion for non-truth. Jesus was very ugly when he was hanging on the cross in his blood and his shame. And so, while that's the most outstanding work of all redemptive history and beautiful in its true meaning of love, on the physical level, it was not beautiful. And so, but that's part of it, though. I'm just going back again. We are revulsed by it, but the beauty of it is spiritual because God took himself that revolting and ugly condition for us. To die for us. But in and of itself, death is not beautiful. In and of itself, ugliness is ugliness. And we were created in our senses, in our body, to appreciate genuine beauty and goodness, loveliness. Okay. Well, before I give you kind of the history of modern art, let's just dissect the two words, look at them one by one, modern and art. art is literally a skill. And so it's less of a science, a knowledge, and more of an art or a skill, we would say. It's a skill where we take things that are material or physical, or we take sounds and we create something with it that communicates by its very form. And so when it comes to art, form communicates. One of my favorite examples of this is when we take hymns, you can mix and match them by putting different words on the same tune. And, you know, if you take the 11-11-11 meter of how firm a foundation, how firm a foundation, ye saints of the Lord, which is very confident. If you take that and then apply it to away in a manger, how firm a foundation, ye saints. You know, when you kind of go through that lullaby, it sounds almost ludicrous. It's because a lullaby is meant to not be firm. It's meant to be soft and cuddly and put me to sleep. And so when you mix a form with content and they don't match, as one hymn writer called it, a happy marriage of text and tune, if they don't match, it's jarring. It's even ludicrous. But when they do match, there's something very beautiful about it. Edgar Allan Poe, who's not in himself a very holy writer, but I was introduced to one of his poems called The Bell at the part of it where it's cheery. He's a very dark poet. And so, but listen to how the poet creates the feel of bell by just this one stanza. Keeping time, time, time in a sort of runic rhyme, in the throbbing of the bells, 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 to the sobbing of the bells, keeping time, 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 as he knells, 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 in a happy runic rhyme, to the rolling of the bells, 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 to the tolling of the bells, of the bells, 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 to the moaning and the groaning of the bells. Now that's actually not so much the happy part, the moaning and the groaning, as it moves towards, I think it is, the tolling of the death bell. But you can feel the rhythm of the poem. It's meant to give a, and maybe I should slow it down to the bells, 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 and you can hear the swaying of that rhythm. There's one poem by E.E. Cummings, next to, of course, God, America, I, that shatters all the words. They don't even make full sentences with all sorts of cliches, patriotic statements that does then, it kind of parodies or is a satire on empty patriotic speeches where people don't have real feeling or thought behind it and they're just saying words. It's that form that communicates. So if you're able to access this on the internet, look up Edvard Munch, M-U-N-C-H, or Munch, The Scream. It's a piece of modern art. And if you've done that, you can see how different it looks than, say, a Rembrandt from the Baroque era. Some of those things that we talked about back in the winter, you know, of just the realistic representation that was in that time period in the 1600s, 1700s. How different now. He doesn't even look like a human being, and all the swirls and the colors, which are intense, I believe. You know, what does it communicate to you? What does that form communicate to you? Is this something that you would want to just have, you know, pictured before you in a nice resort setting, you know, where you're going to relax somewhere? Or is this a picture of stress in the modern city or the modern era? Pressure and swirling and nothing staying the same and I can't take it. There's a picture for you, right? The form is communicating and he rightfully calls it the scream. Well, the art, one premise then that we're having is art communicates by its form. Second, when we talk about modernity, the biggest thing I want you to know here is that modernity is characterized, or modern times is characterized by the fact-value split. Francis Schaeffer talks about this in his book Escape from Reason, which you're going to read and as your assignment, and he's going to describe how the West moved from the Middle Ages, where reason was given a little bit of autonomy or a little bit of ability credited with, you can learn some things about God that are true apart from the Bible, and philosophically you can learn them, to then the Reformation that affirmed if you're going to know God truly and rightly, you need written revelation. I think there's a truth on both sides that you can know about God. You can know God exists through nature, and Romans 1 says that holds us accountable. But if you're going to know who he is, you have to hear him speak because he's personal. So you need to have his word. Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from God's mouth. So he starts with the Middle Ages and then moves into the Reformation era, affirming reason has some, well, the West begins to see reason as having some ability. By the Enlightenment era, revelation is put to the side. People close their Bibles and set it aside, and reason is said to give us all the answers. Within about 200 years, it is obvious to thinkers that reason will not give us the answers. Rather than turn back to the Bible, we saw in the winter that even rationality was questioned. If reason cannot give us the answers, maybe the problem is reason itself being rational? The problem actually was rationalism, relying on reason alone to gain a knowledge about God. Reason is to be used in conversation with revelation, so that as God speaks to me, made in his image, I think about what he says. Paul says, consider what I say, and the Lord will give you understanding in everything. That's the way God designed us. Faith and reason go together, and everything is ultimately based on faith. God has to tell me why he does what he does and what he's going to do in the future, and I base my life on that firm foundation. So, the West did not do that about 1800. The West turned to even irrationalism. Schaeffer will call it the line of despair. He will say this is when the West escaped from reason, or quit thinking, or quit affirming the goodness of reason to give or to involve absolute or big picture answers. Now, there's something a little misleading about that picture that I want to give you right now. Schaeffer is going to describe an upper story and a lower story, called it. In the upper story, that's the realm of meaning. The lower story is the realm of fact. Upper story is a realm of meaning. We call it values. Lower story is a realm of fact. So if you were to, like, here's a fact. You show up to school one day, and there's a Hershey's Kiss on the table where you normally sit. That's a fact. What's its meaning? You don't know. You might even find out who put it there. But you don't know what it means until what? They tell you. You can't, oh, no, I know what it means. It's that cute boy over there. And I know he's had his eye upon me, he's been thinking about me, and he's really wanting to get my attention. And so the Hershey's Kiss is there because he wanted me to know he appreciates me. Do you really know that? You might even know he put it there, and he put it there at your spot. Do you know that's why? Maybe he has ulterior motives. Maybe he's out to make somebody else jealous. He has no interest in you. I don't know. We don't know until the person reveals their motives. Meaning is wrapped up in words. As an actor, somebody who does it tells us what they're doing. Fact can be observed and scientifically studied, and you can get data together. Well, here's the problem. Modern man lives in a world of data, lots of facts. Science still goes on, and in the realm of science and the scientific method, reason is affirmed. In fact, very affirmed. Some people say that's all that you can know, is just facts, scientific facts. But even them making that claim is beyond what scientific facts can even say, and so that's overreaching itself. But there's a lot of scientific study going on with fact. Ah, but modern man doesn't know what it means. Some modern men assume it means nothing because there's no God out there. But others might think they know what it means and assign a meaning based on the laws they so-called figure out, and then they create a big picture like the communists do of what history means. They don't know. They don't know what the God of heavens is going to do through his son Jesus Christ next year or in the centuries to come. And so meaning is ultimately in the realm of revelation. God has to talk to us. But if the West doesn't want to listen to revelation, all you're left with is facts. Well, that's pretty sad way to live. All I have is facts, and it means nothing. Some people live with that and die that way. That's called nihilism. It's like life is meaningless. They have a hard time even justifying why they should continue to live if life gets tough, which is horrific. Some people, they turn to the moment. Well, life is meaningless, but I can at least be authentic and have an authentic experience. And so they live for the moment, and you only live once, and it's called existentialism. And so they try to affirm those sweet moments, or they try to create themselves with various, now this persona or that image, and create a meaning out of thin air. Ultimately, that attempt to create value, self-create value, is the postmodern upper story that Schaefer talks about, where the value realm is. It's not connected to fact. It's self-created. It's constructive. If enough people build it and believe it, it then is a culture, according to them. It has its own language and it's tribal, but it's not connected to reality. It's just constructed, and it can be deconstructed. On the bottom, you can't fix it. If there's a canyon there, the bridge is either going to work or not work. You can't construct a value on it and think, I feel like it's going to work, or this is the meaning. In the realm of facts and engineering, it better be true to science, it better be true to the facts, or it falls. And so this is what you're left with in the West, is the West has tried to create meaning out of thin air. That's called the Romantic. It's from the Romantic era. And then on the bottom is the realm of fact, and that's the development of science and the history of the disciplines of biology, chemistry, and physics. This is what modern culture lives with. When C.S. Lewis was faced with this as a young man and an atheist, he found himself believing all that was true in the factual realm, that his rationalism said was true. He found it thin, meaningless, not beautiful. But all that he found beauty in, the myths of the pagan Norse or the Greek myths and such, he found beauty in those myths, but they were all imaginary. And so between the two, he felt divided. On the one hand, living in the fact realm, there was no meaning, but it was real. But then in the myth realm, there was lots of meaning, but it was imaginary. For him, it was finally recognized when he saw in Jesus Christ, I think it's a slippery phrase, but he called it the true myth, that he saw that Jesus Christ is God come to man, and so there is meaning in this world. God entered the world of fact. There's no split between the values and the facts. Even though I don't agree with how Lewis calls it or describes it, his insight is the true solution to the modern dilemma of the fact-value split. It's a fact-value union in Christianity. Well, with that background, art is form that communicates, and modernity, modern times, is a fact-value split, where meaning is self-created and not based on what is, in reality, the facts. They're separate. It's that in mind that leads us to modern art. And let's just look at two movements to begin with. On the one hand are the expressionists. If you've seen Vincent van Gogh and the Starry Night and the swirls and the cypress trees and the movement, it's like the scream. It's expressing the inner feelings of the artist. This is the upper value. This is the value, the upper story, as Schaefer would call it. The impressionists are on the opposite end. I've been greatly helped by a book that I'll have you read when you're seniors, by Nancy Piercy, Saving Leonardo. The impressionists, and she was trained by Schaefer, the impressionists are like Claude Monet, the haystacks. It's like a scientific investigation of light and the different ways that light plays off of the object and with our eyes. Seurat, his study on Sunday in the Park, used only dots to create this mural. I've seen it at the Art Museum, Art Institute in Chicago. And when you walk up, get close to it and look at it, you can't tell anything. It's just dots of color. This is what we know so commonly as digital imagery. Little dots of color that combine together. Our mind is able to combine them together and form them together to see things. And so, wow, he did this in the 1800s before it was even known that light strikes surfaces in dots. According to quantum physics, that's even reality. And so the impressionists are on the side of the scientific fact investigation using art that way. And expressionism is using art to express the feelings of the artist. It doesn't have to be tied to fact. It's my emotional state. And art expresses it. Does this resonate with you? That this is what modern art can be? That many of you know, artists tend to, on the one hand, be very expressive people and emotional and getting their thoughts out. And you look at it, so it's so self-referential. It's like suffocating. It's just you. It's just, if I'm there, it's just me and my little world. How small is that? And of course, many artists are depressed. And then on the other hand, if they reach out into reality, well, I'm gonna get out of myself and go into what is real. Their culture doesn't tell them anymore that what is real is God. And so when they go out there, all they see is facts. And then their art ends up being almost an imitation of technology. It could end up being that with thought about what is real, and so Seurat and Monet and such. I hope you can see it's a split between the two. A couple other movements, let me talk about Cubism. How many of you have ever seen one of those Picasso paintings? Hopefully, some of those are immoral, of prostitutes and such. But even on those, you can't hardly tell what is in the picture. The people's faces, the nose is over here, the ear is over here, there's shapes, there's like curves, this and that, lines. You take his guitars, if you look at them, they're not connected. It's not realistic in that way. These are symbolic shapes then on canvas. Paul Cézanne, I think, was the first to move this way, to use geometric shapes to describe things. I think this would be on the side of the impressionistic side. Some of this actually uses the primitivism of the African cultures. One of the artists even went to the South Seas. A lot of this is immoral. If I affirm that there's no meaning in this life, or that meaning is created by me, even the beautiful things of life, the things that should be cherished, the things that give birth to physical life. Sexuality is a beautiful thing that should be, as it is in Song of Songs, veiled with just discreetly veiled with subtle and quiet images. So that's not pornographic and abused. I am told by, I think, more than one writer that the West basically abused the African cultures and treated them in a kind of a legendary fake way as representing a free-for-all, have sex anytime you want culture kind of thing, and they idolized it and then used and co-opted those images to kind of further the Western transformation from Christianity and being moral and morally pure to a licentious, live what, however you please, create your own meaning in whatever way you want kind of culture. Those images were co-opted that way to promote that. I remember Mark Coppinger in an article that he wrote. He's a professor down at the seminary where I graduated from in Louisville. He said, if Richard Weaver was true that ideas have consequences, well, then it is also true that consequences have ideas. And by that he means, if I want this result, I will create ideas to get there. And Paul talks about this when he charges Timothy to preach the word. He says in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 3, the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but wanting to have their ears tickled, they will accumulate for themselves teachers in accordance with their own lusts, and turn away their ears from the truth and turn aside to myths. It's in accordance with their own desires. Consequences have ideas. If I want a certain way and I want to live a certain way, I will then grab certain things and falsely promote them and misrepresent them to promote my own agenda. And I think some of this that we see in art is representing some of that shift. When you get to the data movement out of, I believe, Germany, some of it is absolutely obscene. Obscene literally means off-scene. Normally with plays in the past and movies that have sensibility, it would be suggested that a murder occurred, but you wouldn't have it graphically represented before your eyes. Those things, as I can attest, within my own family, I've seen the Holocaust Museum and the images there. Just strongly, I think you might even say damage might be too hard, but cripple a child for a while. It was too graphic, too much, too young. And so this movement kind of throws those kind of limits away, and you find The Fountain, which is a urinal in 1917, turned over. It's Marcel Duchamp's painting, that nude descending staircase that Francis Schaeffer describes in his companion book to Escape from Reason, the larger one that has all the data, a lot of the data behind it, the God who is there. He describes it in this way, that you will look and look and look at the painting. It looks like pickup sticks, just lines, sticks, kind of coming down the painting in a certain way. You will look and look and look, and it's not there graphically. You will not find a naked person there. But the longer you look, he says, your mind is defiled. Because you're imagining. It's a dirty trick, I would say. This showed up in 1913 in the New York Armory Show, and Schaeffer says it marks a line moving from the older era in America. It's the first time such indecency was shown in public in America, apparently. And so this marks a line that transitions to ruin. Say, where's modern culture? Where does that last stage begin? Well, Paul Johnson, in his book on modern times, starts it, I think, with 1905 and Einstein's theory of relativity. But Einstein's theory of relativity is totally rational. It's surprising, but it's very rational. Instead of relativity, he wanted it called invariance, thinking that would be a better name. It's not open to options. It does not at all qualify for moral relativism, like it kind of says the postmodern way of creating your own meaning is somehow scientifically backed. Not at all. Now, I'm not saying Paul Johnson misused it. It definitely broke up the physics world and surprised everybody when Einstein started both that and quantum physics, in large part at that time period. But this 1913 might be a good date, because not only do you have the Dada movement and Marcel Duchamp, which is kind of mocking reality and being obscene in its approach, but also you have Igor Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, which uses a pagan sacrifice to then as its theme. So it reaches back into paganism again, which we've seen with the use of the civilized cultural Europe going back to pagan roots and primitivism. But it has no melody. And it nearly caused a riot, from what I'm told, at the opening night in Paris. It's a revolutionary piece of music. This is, now, we're turning away from beauty, we're turning away from that kind of meaning, and we're groping. Either we're going to try to create a meaning for ourselves with expressionism, or if we try to be strictly scientific, like the Impressionists, we might come up with something like Schoenberg's 12-note system. Instead of an 8-note octave, he's going to come up with a scientifically based, his disciple, apparently, according to Nancy Piercy, really promoted it. Like an randomly occurring striking of the notes. It is utterly jarring and not beautiful, from what I'm told. And this is what we see then. If we see on the one hand expressionism in a modern art museum of like, there's the artist's feelings again, how they feel, not tied to any reality. On the other hand, you're going to have something that's going to be just only reality, no meaning. Somebody was suspended by ropes over a huge canvas like Jackson Pollock and just threw paint everywhere. Just dribbled it here or there in abstract art. That's reality. The paint itself is falling where it wills, apart from an artist having meaning. Jackson Pollock ends up taking his own life. The world is meaningless. And so you're left with the fact value split. This is what modern art represents. Either you're going to have to create your own meaning, but it's not tied to reality, but don't think too hard about it. Or you have to own up to the facts and just recognize it's tough. There is no reality. There's no meaning to it. This is the two options that art represents to us today. And thankfully, Christianity and Christ is different than that. You can have both fact, Christ died, and meaning, Christ died for your sins. Because not only can you observe history, you can listen to the author of history give you his intentions for the world and for you. And so faith and reason combined together, with faith as the foundation, reason on top of it, consider what I say, what is revealed, and God will give you understanding in everything. What does all this mean? Well, the bottom line then, in modern times, we have brokenness, loss of meaning, isolation, either hedonism, living for pleasure, or nihilism, there's no purpose at all in it, or combined together. How different even the forms are. If Samuel Taylor Coleridge, The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, and I had you read that, is a romantic, he still believed, and I don't think it's right, but that imagination was somehow tied to revelation. He wasn't creating. He didn't believe in that upper story meaning being created out of thin air. It was given as divine revelation. I don't believe that to be true. Jesus, our God, gives us words, just in the fact realm, which also have spirit with them, which have that spiritual meaning as well. Well, Coleridge then still has some realm of some place for revelation, and his rhyme is in a traditional English ballad, but a truly modern man, though he didn't stay here, he finally later went back to the church. T.S. Eliot, an American in England, an expatriate, here's what he says in his Hollow Man. If you were to read that, this would be how different than Coleridge. He's got quotes from various other literature and different things. Mr. Kurtz be dead is a quote, a penny for the old guy. We are the hollow men. We are the stuffed men, leaning together, headpiece filled with straw, alas. Our dried voices when we whisper together are quiet and meaningless as wind in dry grass, or rat's feet over broken glass in our dry cellar. Shape without form, shade without color, paralyzed force, gesture without motion. Those who have crossed with direct eyes to death's other kingdom remember us, if at all, not as lost, violent souls, but only as the hollow men, the stuffed men. It's almost like if we were violent souls, at least we had a cause and a purpose, but we have no cause, no purpose, we're just hollow, we're just stuffed, as it were, stuffed animals. Part two then says, eyes I dare not meet in dreams in death's dream kingdom, these do not appear. There the eyes are sunlight on a broken column. There is a tree swinging and voices are in the wind singing, more distant and more solemn than a fading star. Let me be no nearer in death's dream kingdom. Let me also wear such deliberate disguises, rat's coat, crow's skin, cross staves in a field, behaving as the wind behaves, no nearer. Not that final meeting in the twilight kingdom. This is the dead land. This is cactus land. Here the stone images are raised. Here they receive the supplication of a dead man's hand under the twinkle of a fading star. It is like this in death's other kingdom, waking alone, at the hour when we are trembling with tenderness, lips that would kiss form prayers to broken stone. The eyes are not here. There are no eyes here. In this valley of dying stars, in this hollow valley, the broken jaw of our last kingdoms. In this last of meeting places, we grope together and avoid speech, gathered on this beach of the Tumid River, sightless, unless the eyes reappear as the perpetual star multifoliate rose of death's twilight kingdom, the hope only of empty men. And here's the final stanza, which is sacrilegious in a way. Here we go round the prickly pear, prickly pear, prickly pear. Here we go round the prickly pear at 5 o'clock in the morning. Between the idea and the reality, between the motion and the act, falls the shadow, for thine is the kingdom. Between the conception and the creation, between the emotion and the response, falls the shadow. Life is very long. Between the desire and the spasm, between the potency and the existence, between the essence and the descent, falls the shadow. For thine is the kingdom. For thine is. Life is. For thine is the. This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. Not with a bang, but a whimper. Meaningless, broken, shattered, and isolated. The revulsion of that poem, compared to some of the beauty of previous ages, reminds us of that innate, created reaction. Something has gone wrong, and we recognize in Western civilization that reason cheated us, our pride betrayed us, but rather in our discovery of our pride, that reason could not give us big answers, rather than return in humility to God, we proudly asserted that life has no meaning, and neither we are now creating our own meaning, or we're just toughening up and living in that reality. That's pride leading to death. And it is utterly unnecessary, like Jonah says in his prayer in the belly of the whale. They forsake their own mercy, who follow after other gods, I think is what it says. They forsake their own mercy. The West, which is so privileged with the heritage of Christianity, when God sent Paul to the Macedonians and turned his face west, we were privileged in the world to have the message of Christ come to us. And so many of our institutions and heritages are based on the truth of Jesus Christ. We who have such a heritage, we have been given so much to whom so much then is required, are very accountable for the rejection that we have given to Almighty God and to His Son, Jesus Christ. It is no wonder that having sown to the wind, we are reaping the whirlwind. We are living in the age of ruin for good reason. We have rejected the God of Revelation, and God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. May the Lord grant us in the West, and those who hear this, those in the West, people in the West, to repent. We need to turn back to the source of life, even in the midst of ruin. I hope this has been helpful to understand modern culture. And if you have any questions, please let me know. Thank you.